This is Exploring the Marketplace Podcast. I'm Sean Bowles.
And I'm Bob Hassan. And together, we're inviting you into conversation about what God is doing with entrepreneurs, influencers, and everyday career fields.
Get a fresh perspective with our commentary and stay for the main chorus from our handpicked guests who are vulnerable, transparent, and sharing how their faith affects their career in powerful ways.
If a picture's worth a thousand words, then their life story is worth a thousand sermons. Here we go. Welcome to Exploring the Marketplace. I'm Bob Hassan with my co-host, Sean Bowles. Sean, I know we have an amazing show. Tell us about it.
Well, first, you and I get to talk about, it's amazing, Bob. Forbes put out an article in 2024 that said that the biggest challenge for business leaders and owners right now is hiring creative talent. There's just not enough available. They're not finding it. It's like 70%. It's their number two issue in existence, which I've never heard that before. Then we have our special guest, main feature, so amazing. And this is David Bahnsen, who is a wealth manager, who's going to share his journey. He's also a commentator. He does a lot of public speaking, and does a lot of wealth management. So he shares from a very kind of established place into cultural issues, but it's not the common narrative you always hear. So I'm excited to hear from him as well.
Well, I can't wait. Let me read some listener feedback.
Yes.
Actually, people out there who like us, Sean. This podcast is so refreshing. I've been so encouraged by so many of the stories shared in this platform. Thank you. And that is from Motet2. Thanks for all of our listeners. Make sure you leave your comment, questions, or interact with us on our YouTube channel or social media, or you can go to bowlesministries.com and ask a question there. We love hearing from you.
And this podcast is supposed to be like a conversation. So we want to hear from you and interact with you. So make sure to leave a comment, like Bob's saying. We want to hear you. We have listener questions every week, and we have one coming up right after a real topic. So here we go. This is Forbes, Bob. They put out the top three challenges of business leaders this year in 2024. And number two was not surprising, but was surprising. There's a contest for creative talent. They can't find enough creative talent. And they're hiring people who don't have the talent they need, and they're suffering because of it. And here's what it said. I love this. It said, are you surprised by this one? I'm not. Creativity is the only sustainable asset that any individual organization or nation will ever again have. And he said, I made the proclamation 27 years ago when assessing the talent pool at a corporate client. It launched his commitment to studying creativity and consulting to clients, and even spawned a graduate course at FDU, Creativity Challenge and the 21st Century Leader. So skills can be replaced. Creativity cannot. And this new idea can be replaced, but the ability to generate those ideas cannot. You need creative talent to do it. Expertise can be replaced, but readiness that comes from creativity cannot. So apparently, you know, all these respondents were agreeing to it. That was one of the most responded to articles this year so far. On top of that, 70% of employers say creative thinking is the most in-demand skill in 2024. Wow. 70%. So you share a lot of times about startups, Bob, and you share about how they've hired their first generation of talent, and it's usually a low talent pool because they don't have the finances or leadership yet to attract the greater talent. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the things that a lot of people struggle with, is that they realize, like, I need more out of an employee, maybe a bookkeeper or a manager, a CFO, whatever it is, or maybe it's just somebody who's running an organization, but I can only afford this much and I'm desperate to get to the next level, but I have a talent problem. So let's talk about this. I mean, have you seen this quite a bit?
Actually, it's so interesting that we're talking about this today, because I am helping a bootstrap company that started with 10 employees. And it was basically, let's get warm bodies. Let's get people who were excited.
It's your aunt, your mom, and your grandma. No.
Yeah. And so now this company is 4 years in. And they're going through the growing pains that you're talking about, because while this group was great in the beginning, full of excitement, what's coming to pass as the company grows into a corporation is that it needs more.
Yeah.
And so there's all this pain with the CEO, who's he's very caring. He's got a great culture. He's built an amazing culture. But now changes have to be made. And as changes are starting to be made and people are starting to leave, it's putting upheaval into the culture. Like, am I next?
Yeah.
And one of the things that we're seeing is, I'm estimating that 5 out of the 10 will turn over.
Yeah.
There, and that's, you know, that's 50%. That's a lot. And so, but what I'm hoping is as the turnover comes and new creative people come in the areas of accounting, of project management, of all the areas that this company needs, I'm hoping that the other people who started with the company will say, wow, I need to adjust. Yeah. I need to go get some further training. I need to become creative in how I'm going to come about solutions for my department. Even if they're not trained, that they would have the ability to say, okay, Lord, what is this company requiring of me? And how can I take the things that I'm really good at and keep doing them well, and take the things that I'm not trained for and begin to really show an improvement?
I love that. And I think, you know, this is the generation of time that if you have skills and you have talent and you have trained honing and being in a team, you're going to succeed in whatever you do. But a lot of people don't want to get that training. There's this mentality of like, I got enough, you know, like I've worked for this company for a lot of years. I feel like I'm doing good, but there's so much to learn. There's so much to learn in humanity, and whatever skills we can gain to become an asset to who we are is so important. I remember going to a studio for a film shoot I was doing, and it was outside of LA. And in LA, a lot of the makeup artists or the hairstylists or whoever, they're one hit wonder. They could do that one thing. And a lot of them, there's a big turnover with makeup artists. There's a big turnover with hairstylists. And I went to this town and I didn't have the collar stays for my shirt. And the lady's like, oh, I have some. And I'm like, you're amazing. She's like, let me just fix your hair. Can I cut this part of your hair? I'm like, she's doing makeup. And I'm like, sure. And then she's like, oh, let me pluck that eyebrow. And then she's like doing, she did so much stuff. And I looked the best I'd ever looked. And I went out and she did, you know, all the stuff. And I go, man, you are so good. You're a hairstylist. You're a costume person, or, you know, you're a wardrobe person. You're a makeup artist. She goes, you know what? I've been trained in each of those areas, so I can be the most available I can, because I live in a small market and they have a lot more needs.
Yes.
And actually in LA, because people get into a union and they only do their one thing, they're actually useless sometimes, because people need them to do more. People can't hire 25 roles sometimes for commercial, and they need that person to go, oh, do you need something for your collar? Or do you need a beard cream for your beard? Whatever it is. And I've talked to makeup artists now in LA who are like, I'm frustrated because people are entitled in their position. They just want to do just their thing and be such an expert in their thing. And there's almost an entitlement to it. Like, I don't have to do that. That's below me or something. And so I say this story because I feel like if I was going to hire now for a TV show, I'd hire the girl from the Midwest.
Yes.
And bring her out, because she was so valuable. She was mm-hmm. I liked working with her. She was professional and she does everything. That's who you want.
Exactly. And we had a guest on Exploring the Marketplace who ran a human resources, a hiring company. And we asked him, like, okay, just tell our audience, what's the one thing that you would tell someone who's looking for a job? And he was like,
yeah,
tell your employers that you're willing to work in the office. And I just sat back. I couldn't believe it. Like, I know we had a pandemic. I know there was a lot of people at home, but the number one thing employers are looking for is somebody who's willing to come into the office. And it goes right to what you're saying. This lady was willing to do everything related to what you needed. And we have to be willing to shift and adjust. We have to be willing to go the extra mile. We have to be willing to show why we're valuable.
Yeah. And that's the employee. And on an employer end, I love what you're talking about with the company we're consulting and sharing with, because as an employer, you have to be bold enough to recognize when the people you currently have don't have the talent, the education, or the ability to go to the next level. And we want to, sometimes we come into it as Christians, we're like, I'm going to be with you for life. And relationally, you might be, but we have different purposes and they may come and go as we go. Just like I thought I would never leave the church I first went to when I was in my teens.
Yeah.
And that's so many years ago, I can't even remember it now, but I was in covenant in my heart, you know, I'm going to die here. But then I'm like, gone. And I thought I'd never leave LA, and here I am in Dallas, you know, those kinds of things. And I think that it's important for employers to realize, like, you do not have that weird, almost like cultish system over your relationships to your employees. You are not their provider. God is. And there's times to separate for good reasons and bad reasons. There's time to set, not just to fire, but also to lay off for the sake of what else needs to happen. And I remember when I was working at a video game company and I was running the organization, And there was a woman over me who was the investor and the CEO, and I was under her. And so we hired a programmer who was great for corporate programs, but it was video games. And so I had to go to him because the owner said, I want like Universal to do or some huge company. I don't want a little programmer who's never done video games before. I want you to lay him off. He doesn't have the skill for it. And he's proven it because we've given him 3 months of work and there's nothing that's come from it. And so I went to him and I said, hey, just so you know, like, we love working with you. It's not a personality issue, but it's a skill level issue. We need a whole team, mm-hmm. video game team, not just a one person. And we need people who've done this before and have already done it several times. And that's the kind of money our investor has and our owner has. And that's what she wants in performance. So it's not a you issue in the sense of like who you are, we love you, but it is a you issue in the sense that you're trying to get in the video game industry and this isn't your entry point for it because you're just not mm-hmm. confident enough for that yet. And of course he went to the place of ultimate offense first. How dare you? Like, I'm a good programmer. It's not that much different than what I'm doing. But then when he realized I'm over my head on every level, and it usually takes 25 to 150 people to program a game, not one corporate programmer, you know, he realized like, okay, I was over my head, and it took him a minute. But I had to be brave to make that. I mean, I was doing a direct order, but I had to be brave and just tell him like, honestly. And I feel like there's a lot of leaders who aren't brave, or they won't assess the reality of an employee because they're just hoping they'll manifest some sort of skill or talent that they haven't been to school for. They're not an environment to be trained in. You can't train them because you're already in survival mode for everything else you're doing. And you think they're somehow going to manifest something that will never happen in their life because it's probably not God's will for them. And so sometimes you're a placeholder for them too, as an employer, and you have to recognize that.
That's so good. It reminds me, I think about this scripture. Sometimes we misquote it, but in Zechariah, the Lord says, don't despise small beginnings.
Absolutely.
And in some translations, it goes to, for the Lord loves it when we start. Mm. And when I was younger and heard that, I thought, well, of course, like when we're beginning, when we're starting. But as I've gotten older, I recognize that scripture is appropriate because we're constantly shifting and adjusting.
Yeah,
we're constantly starting over again. We're constantly having small beginnings in the shift and the adjustments that we're going through. And I think it's a perfect scripture talking about today.
Yeah. Well, we have our guest coming up, but before we do that, we take questions from our listeners each and every week. And we have one this week from Lori.
All right. Lori asks, do we need to be preparing for a food shortage? I see these Patriot ads where they've packaged food and was wondering what to do. Lots of other podcasts have these sponsors also. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have a Patriot food sponsor right now.
No.
But, you know, I think it's relevant to business people. And that's why I allowed this question to be kind of a question of the week as we're producing the show, because I feel like we're hitting food shortages in certain areas around the world, and we're hitting bad management, and we're also hitting all kinds of food sources and then chemicals and injections being put in foods. So there's food crisis, period. And there's a shortage. I mean, we were just told by the FBI just last week, and then again 2 months ago, that there's already cyber attacks that are set up like dominoes to go off from lots of different, from Russia, from China, in America. So I'm talking to the Americans right now. And that these could stop our electricity for anywhere from 2 days to 2 weeks, even up to 2 months. That would stop our water supplies from happening. That would stop our food supplies from happening. And the average relief person who's doing relief, like your fire chief or your fire marshal is doing relief in your region, your area around you, is telling you to be prepared for 3 days, if not 7 days, per person in your family. That, you know, the World Health Organization is telling you for 7 days. Other organizations are telling you up to 30 days. So it depends on who you're with. And I think as business owners and preparing our employees for whether it's an earthquake or a tornado or a hurricane, or whether it's an actual terrorist attack, or whether it's an issue of just something shuts down, a hacker attack, whatever it would be, I think we have a responsibility in our career to prepare, to have preparedness and to have that side of our life taken care of to some degree as well. You don't have to live off grid on a homestead and, you know, in the middle of nowhere, but even in a city, like my wife has been working on our little homestead in an urban environment for what can we do to be prepared for an extended period of time. If the FBI is correct and we have some real problems ahead of us and they're already there, he was saying it's not if, but it's when now. That's what he said to Congress 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. So if that's true, that means that we have to look at it and go, okay, what are we going to do to prepare our families and our businesses and the place, the people we work with? Because that's how we show love, is the very first prophetic word in the Bible about anything, you know, in the book of Acts, besides the Holy Spirit's going to come from Jesus himself, was that Agabus said, hey, there's a famine coming and we have to store up to prepare for this famine for all the brothers and sisters to be able to be okay during it. And it was an extended multi-year period of famine. So they took that word and they had a lot of faith to save resources for years to show love.
I love that answer, Sean. And I think the key to it is the word preparedness, or prepared, or preparing. Sometimes these questions are, the undercurrent is with fear.
Yeah.
And we don't, fear and love can't coexist, because fear has to do with punishment, John 4:18. So we need to be prepared. And I love your answer. I love how you answered. And I think that was a great question. I'm so glad people are asking us questions. You can go to bullsministries.com and press the ask a question button, and we will answer your questions. Well, Sean, it's time for our main course. Who do we have on?
Well, we have David Bahnsen, who's the founder and managing partner and chief investment officer of the Bahnsen Group, which is a national private wealth management firm with offices in Newport Beach, New York City, Bend, Nashville, Minneapolis, Austin, and Phoenix. Wow. They're managing over $5 billion in client assets. And David's consistently named as one of the top financial advisors in America by Barron's, Forbes, and the Financial Times. He's a frequent guest on Fox News, Fox Business, CNBC, and Bloomberg. And he's also a regular contributor to the National Review and World, and appears weekly on the World and Everything in It podcast, where he discusses the week's economic and market news. David's going to share from more of the personal side. You don't always get to hear this side of him when he's sharing on Fox News or when he's sharing in a financial report. You're going to hear him and his faith journey. And I love that we get to talk to people like David, and we get to see the behind the scenes, inside the heart. And I can't wait for our guest up next.
I want to invite you to partner with us to spread the gospel around the world. And we're doing this through our TV shows and our podcasts, our social media. We're helping Christians navigate culture with a biblical worldview of what God's doing right now in society, news, entertainment, the church, through the Sean Bowles Show, which is our weekly commentary show. We're building courage with our ministry audience for their calling and their careers, for exploring the marketplace, which is a CBN news show and a podcast. And we're helping thousands to grow spiritually in their connection to Christ and training them to hear God's voice. And we're activating them in their gifts and helping them to have coaching tools for their inner development through Spiritual Growth Academy Online. On top of this, I get to minister around the world with Sound Biblical Truth on Prophetic Edge through YouTube all week long. And we have Sunday services even with YouTube. And we have weekly videos. And this doesn't even touch other social media that we do. I, of course, do a lot of ministry with TBN, and I host a lot of different media outside of what we're doing in our ministry. But we want to have you come help us. We want to invite you to help us expand our reach. And we are on testimony overload of the goodness of God changing people's lives through the impact that we're having as a ministry. But we need you to help us create this media, this ministry. You can be a part of our team and our family. And we get to pray for you when you do this. We pray for our partners weekly. We get to resource you. We send you regular resources, both in the mail, but also online, because we want you to be equipped and reinforced. And we also have monthly partner meetings where you get to connect with me and our Bulls team online live, so you can feel the synergy of what God's doing and let it energize your life, as well as we get to pray for you live every month. And if you can't come live, you're still going to watch the video and get the prayer, because we take whatever God's doing in our ministry and we impart it to you so you can have the benefit. But become a partner today so our fruit becomes your fruit.
Well, welcome back. We are here with David. David, welcome to the show.
Wonderful to be with you.
Hey, we're so glad to hear your story, because you have a really prolific story of making big choices in your journey of your career that led to incredible opportunities. And these really came from a place of faith. But I want to talk, I think I'm going to bring us back here, and this may not be where you want to start, so you can start us out somewhere else. But I thought it'd be good to talk about your leaving Morgan Stanley, because that's a big thing. You were very successful in that company, and you decided to move on to something, and it was really inspired by some vision you had for life. So talk to us about this.
Well, I had built out a successful business at Morgan Stanley. I had a very good position there. I had been for quite some time a managing director in the firm. They had over 60,000 employees, but very few managing directors. And so it was a position I was very comfortable in. And very candidly, if I was going to run a wealth management practice for clients at a big Wall Street firm, I would have been perfectly happy to do it at Morgan Stanley. It was a fine firm. They had done well for me. I had done well for them. The issue was, it was a little bit before I turned 40 years old. And I said, if I'm going to be doing this for decades to come, and I'm going to do it on my own, in my own firm, then now's the time to do it. I don't think I was going to go through the incredible trouble of setting up my own business and doing everything we did to move our clients into a new company once I was 50, 60, 65 years old. So, So I was ready to go, and we made the leap of faith. And it is very interesting how it worked out, because I believe I was right that entrepreneurially and the autonomy I wanted to run the business how I saw fit, that going out on our own was a very wise decision, and it's worked out wonderfully for us. But what I didn't know that God knew was that just a few years later, the world was going to kind of lose its mind a little bit. And I thought I was reasonably protected at Morgan Stanley, where my own religious beliefs and political beliefs and so forth, they really didn't ever get in the way for me. Because I think we were still in a period there where if you were making money for the company, which I certainly was, they left you alone. Yeah. And a few years later, that changed. And had I still been at the firm when we went through a period of what I consider to be kind of enhanced radicalization and enhanced insanity, I think I would have been much more vulnerable. But instead, as God saw fit, I was in a place where I had total freedom to say what I believed, to write books, to go on television and podcasts and other venues, and to write what I believed. And all of this caused us to be able to serve our clients significantly better. And all of it gave us the freedom to grow the business as we saw fit. And so it's one of those rare things where I get to look back at a moment and say, not only do I kind of think I made a good decision, but God had even more reasons for the good decision than I knew of.
Right. Wow. Isn't that always the truth?
Yeah.
David, have you always been interested in numbers and markets when you were in school? How did you get down the career path?
So let me say something kind of interesting here. I don't think markets have very much to do with numbers at all. And so the answer is I've absolutely always been interested in markets, but I view numbers as sort of a post facto measuring component. Mm-hmm. I think markets are about human beings, and markets are about human activity. And there's definitely numbers that come into it. I mean, it's a very fair question. But the excitement of markets to me is not in the numbers. It's not in the measurement of profits and revenues and earnings and margins. The excitement is in the human activity that precedes the numbers. The numbers are measuring something, and what they're measuring is the production of goods and services that meet the needs of humanity. That's what a market is. And out of markets, there is something I know from the Bible about the human person. The human person is reasonable, is rational, has a more enlightened understanding of the world as an image bearer of God than the animal kingdom does. We are wired for self-preservation. There's a lot of fascinating things about the human person. And that's all to me a market is humans freely transacting together. So that's probably more than you wanted to get out of the answer. And yet I've always been fascinated with how free enterprise works. And yet I view free enterprise as a specifically human endeavor.
Let me follow that up then with, in your business, are you looking for well-managed companies that go right into with the human condition that you were just talking about?
Yes, I am absolutely looking for well-managed companies. And I'm defining well-managed companies as companies that profitably produce goods and services that meet the needs of humanity.
That's great.
Wow. Well, I'm going to go back into it even further, because it's kind of that came from somewhere. So like, take us on the earlier journey of your life of like, how did you get here? Like, how did you, obviously you're extremely successful in what you do, and you're, and you've decided to take that success and not just be introverted with it, but actually to teach others, to really equip people to manage wealth, but also to think with a different mindset. Mm-hmm. And you have a new book we're going to talk about in a few minutes out as well, which I think is really key to this. Like, how did you get here to the point where you would not just be somebody who more of like had a quiet career, but you actually, you know, you've left Morgan Stanley where you probably couldn't do what you're doing now, technically wouldn't let you. And now you're doing it because you became your own company leader. But where did this start?
Yeah, it's a wonderful question. I think that, first of all, to that second part, I mean, you're exactly right. I wouldn't be able to. And so what is sort of fascinating about it is that by God's grace, I get a microphone now to share things I believe in, that I'm passionate about. And I wouldn't have that microphone if I didn't have a successful wealth management business. And yet that microphone enables me to share things I believe in that some other people believe too. Not everyone. A lot of people might disagree with my worldview, with my framework for understanding truth and reality. But there are some people out there that agree with it. And so then it draws people to want to work with us. And I'm not anywhere near smart enough to have ever guessed that those things would work the way they have worked.
Yeah.
It all happened very organically and very spontaneously. But the ability to be critical of the Federal Reserve and to go on TV and say so, I could have never done that in my past life. And it would have been inappropriate for me to do so. You know, Morgan Stanley signed my paycheck. I had a fiduciary responsibility to them. And if I had an opinion that was going to hurt their business, that wouldn't have been appropriate or right. Yeah. But now I get to take the risk and reward of those decisions myself. I'm if I say something publicly that might damage my business, I'm only hurting myself. And so I feel that freedom to be somewhat bold and be somewhat liberated. And then also just as a man of faith, I absolutely love the fact that I can say what I want, where I want. It can be in matters of investment and economics and finance, but it can also just be in matters of culture and morality and just that kind of overall framework of how I think the world works. And it's just really liberating to know that I have that freedom. And so this is something that has unfolded in my career in a way that I'm very blessed by.
Well, talk to us about your new book. I noticed you've written a bunch of books, but talk to us about your new book.
Well, the newest book is called Full-Time Work and the Meaning of Life. And it has only been out for a little over a month now. And I'm really very candidly blown away by the response. Very, very grateful. It is not only doing very well, but it's provoking a lot of conversation about whether or not we have an adequate view of work. Do we have a robust enough understanding? And I think it is somewhat controversial. I'm not merely saying your work matters. When you go to work, try hard. When you go to work, be honest. All of those things need to be said. I agree with all of them, but I do think I'm saying a lot more than that. I'm suggesting that God made us to work, that out of the Garden of Eden, before sin entered the world, that his purpose of making us was so we would be productive and creative and innovative and extract the full potential out of his creation. God made the world unfinished and asked us to finish it. And so in Genesis 1, when he goes through and describes having made the oceans and the sun, moon, and stars, and then the plant kingdom and the animal kingdom, he says day by day by day that these things were good. And then he made mankind and said he wanted us to go rule over all these things, to steward them, to have dominion, to multiply, to fill the earth, to subdue the earth. And then he said that we were very good. and that there was this sort of enlightened, enhanced, expanded dignity. And then they said four times in two verses that he made us in his image and likeness, that we are to bear the image of God. And I think too many people hear the words but don't ever think about what it means. We are image bearers of God, but we're not all knowing. We're not all powerful. So we know certain things that it doesn't mean, but what does it mean? The very next verse in chapter 1 of Genesis, in verses 26 to 28, describes us working in the way God had worked. And then he told us to work for 6 days and rest on the seventh. And he told us that the reason we should do that is because that's what he did. He connected our humanity to our image bearing and of him as a worker, and asked us to rule over the garden, to steward it, to name the animals. And one of the fascinating things when you read the book of Genesis, you know, we do know in Genesis 3, the little thing of the serpent coming in the garden and Adam and Eve falling in original sin. Yet you see, as the chapters unfold, chapter 4, 5, 6, 7, that civilization gets built, whole cities get built. And this, you know, mankind invented the wheel, and mankind learned how to start a fire. And we do all these things because God made us with these minds that the animal kingdom didn't have, that a lake doesn't have, that raw material of the earth doesn't have. We have a soul that can never die. And we build God's kingdom with our work, with our earthly endeavors. And because of sin, there's now sweat of the brow attached to that. There's going to be stress and toil and anxiety. But God made work before he made sin, before sin entered the world. He made work as a blessing and as our created purpose. And that's what my book is about.
I love it. And in chapter 2, verse 7, God breathes life into Adam. And then the very next thing he says to Adam in verse 15 is, go tend to the garden or go to work. And this is God's economy right in the beginning. I love that you're talking about this.
Well, and I think that verse 15 of Genesis 2 carries two different verbs in it that I unpack in the book that are so powerful. Avodah and Shamar, where the word literally for work in Hebrew is also translated as to worship and to serve. Mm-hmm. And so when God said in Exodus, 6 days shalt thou work, avodah, that we should work in the garden, avodah. And in Joshua, it says, choose this day whom you will serve, avodah. And then there are just countless uses of that Hebrew prefix avo to mean worship, even in the temple, like in a specifically worshipful sense. So it's not just that I'm arguing theologically that work and worship are the same thing. I'm saying it grammatically.
Yes.
Yeah. No, it's beautiful. I think when I hear you, and I think of a lot of our listeners, some people haven't got to the place where they enjoy their work, but the people who have, that's why you get workaholism, even amongst Christians, because there's something about that flow state. There's something about that connection you get when you're partnering your skills and your talents and your abilities, and you're seeing the fruit of that. And we're wired that way. We just weren't wired to do it out of balance. And I love that God put balance and order in it. And so it's so beautiful that you're talking about this, because I look at eternity as we're still working. There's still things to do. We're not sitting on clouds drinking, you know, orange juice all the time. We're like, we're doing something with God. We're made for significance. Again, I have the question, which I started in the last one, but I asked you two questions and you answered the second one, which is beautiful. I want to find out where this started with you. Where did this deep place of revelation start with you? Like when you were younger, or was it when you were in the middle of family and life and everything else? Talk about that place where you start to carry a message and you start to carry this thing that's like addressing culture, being bold. Where does this come from?
Yeah, for me to answer adequately and honestly, I really have to go back to my upbringing and the just glorious blessing of being raised by Dr. Greg Bahnsen, my late father. He was a renowned Christian intellectual, a philosopher, a theologian, and he was my mentor, my hero. And he passed away at age 47. And I was 20 at the time. And so I entered my adult life with one really difficult thing that I wouldn't wish on anyone. My mom was already gone, and then I lost my dad. And so I entered adult life with this challenge of having this traumatic event and this loss.
Yeah.
But then I also was raised with this foundation of believing these things about the kingdom of God, of being taught the importance of a Christian worldview, and having a very robust understanding of what work meant in the Bible. In the immediate aftermath of my dad's passing, work was, I talk about this in the introduction of my book, it was very cathartic for me. It was a real helpful diversion that allowed me to channel my efforts in a more productive way, as opposed to other diversions that I think are very non-productive and sometimes counterproductive. And I think God made it that way for a reason. So as I've grown in my adult life and over the last 30 years had a career that has ended up being very fulfilling, I'm constantly reminded of where it started and that journey that I've had and the gratitude I have for the fact that the trauma I had gone through in the passing of my dad, it was God who used work as this really productive, therapeutic, useful tool for me to find purpose.
Wow.
So now I find it totally unacceptable for somebody like myself to have had the career I've had to not share this message.
Mm-hmm.
The people who are unfulfilled, unsatisfied in their work, I want them to hear this story. They may not resonate with all of it. I'm well aware of the fact that there's some disconnections for people because I do have a job that comes with a lot of socioeconomic strata. It's, you know, people compliment you a lot and you get paid a lot and all of that. And I know a lot of people don't have that in their work. But see, I didn't start with any of that. That's not where this thing started.
Right.
And I want people to know that the theology of work I advocate, I believe in for blue collar, white collar, highly paid, lowly paid. I believe that God blesses productive work and that there are not two classes of people that he created, the productive people and then those who aren't very productive. I think God made all of us in his image with dignity. And I think he did so because he loves us, not because he hates us.
That's beautiful. We're coming to our last minutes, but one of the things I run into in talking to young people is the young people are having this struggle with work and success and, how should they be in the ministry or should they be producing? I'm sure you've heard the question. How in the last couple of minutes could you talk to, the younger generation that are social media minded, they see influencers, et cetera, et cetera. And they're having a problem with work and what success looks like.
Yeah, it's probably, if it's not the first most, it's the second most common question that has come up. And I understand it. And what I want to say is some of this is that the church has not done a very good job under explaining basic economics to people. Mm. When we work, nobody's going to pay us if we're not producing goods and services that meet the needs of humanity. And yes, it's true that just putting a widget in a box all day can feel very tedious. It could even become physically tenuous, stressful, right? Yeah. But we are creating some value for humanity. Otherwise, somebody wouldn't do it. Now, if we say, I want to do more, in a market economy, people have the ability to go pursue more. They're probably going to want to map out a strategy for that and think of how they get there and what connections they need to build and how they can get promoted or create their own path. You can't just take it for granted, yeah. But we have the ability to not be a slave to where we started. Our station in life can move. So a dynamic, mobile understanding of work is part of the blessing of a market economy, but we have to start with a contentment and the realization that any of our work, every good endeavor, we are to do heartily for the Lord rather than men, and that God is glorified. So I didn't make up this language. When Paul says in 1 Corinthians 10:31, whether you eat or drink, do all the glory of God. He's making the point that even something as mundane as a bite of food and a sip of water should be done the glory of God. All the more so the way we do manufacturing, technology, finance, accounting, consumer marketing, retail, all of our vocational efforts that matter. They matter to God. So what I say to young people, for if they're a believer, I say, do you understand that God cares about the work because God cares about the worker?
Yeah.
And that the work you're doing is being done on behalf of somebody else. You're the subject of the work. You're the worker. And it is done for an object, a customer, a client, someone who's being served by the work. If we believe God cares about the subject of the work, the worker, and the object of the work, the person being served by it, how can we not believe that God cares about the line between those two dots? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so to the extent that people in their 20s are frustrated with where they're starting, I understand, but I don't think our culture has done anyone any favors by suggesting that we're supposed to start with our dream job. It's a journey, not a destination.
Yeah, no, it's so true. And I think so many of our listeners, we've had people write in the past, you know, I'm struggling because I want to do what I'm passionate about, but I'm 25 years old. Do I deserve to do what I'm passionate about yet? And it's just such a big question that people do. But I love how you're bringing it back to even just when you think of the gospel of love and how it's a gospel that God loves us and then we love our neighbors ourselves. I mean, you apply that to work. You just made a beautiful illustration about it. How do people get a hold of your book and all your materials? I'm so excited for our audience to connect to you.
Yeah, the easiest web address, just because it's so easy to remember, is fulltimebook.com. Fulltimebook.com. From there, they not only can see all the info about the book and reviews and audio clips and media interviews and that kind of stuff, but then also there are links to other websites that I'm a part of if they want to stay in touch, and they can leave their email and all of that. So it's a great hub to go to. Fulltimebook.com. And I think this message is a very important one, both in the church and outside of the church. We're wrestling as a society, from the baby boomers all the way down to Gen Z and mm-hmm. everyone in between. And these conversations I'm trying to contribute to in a meaningful way. And I really appreciated this conversation today, guys.
No, we thank you for having a conversation with us. And I know that you guys appreciate David Bonson as much as we do. And I want to encourage you to get his new book that's just come out. And we also want to encourage you to be interactive with us. We have a brand new YouTube channel that you can click on right now, subscribe to, and hit notifications for, and interact with us. Let's have a conversation there about what we were talking about today with David. We'll see you there.
Thanks so much for listening to Exploring the Marketplace, where we have weekly episodes to keep your work and life full of courage and hope. If you enjoyed our question of the week, come and be a part of by asking your question at bowlsministries.com or in the comments, where we might include it in a future episode.
Also, make sure to subscribe to our podcast and be a part of the conversation by following us on our Exploring the Marketplace YouTube channel or at our socials at Sean Bowles or at Bob Hassel on those social media platforms. Visit us at bowlsministries.com, where you can find our book, Wired to Hear, when you're looking for what God has to say about your career, influence, or entrepreneurship.
We will see you next time. Thanks for joining us.